Welcome. Tonight, I invite you to ignore the title for just a moment and join me here in this book, the last book, this small little prophecy at the end of the Old Testament, the book of Malachi. Very short, but I will let you see the title again, and I hope I can make it make sense to you before we're through. When we look in Malachi, in George Orwell's 1984, there is an episode called The Two-Minute Hate, some mix of a pep rally and a fire drill, where frenzied animosity is stirred up against this public enemy. And, well, I don't have the energy for a two-minute hate, but I do want to give you a two-minute recognition. A two-minute identification. I want to spend just the first couple of minutes, and I mean that about as literally as I can, identifying a problem that's identified in the majority of Malachi, but I don't want to spend most of our time on that. I want to get on to what grows out of that problem. What is the response to the problem? So this is my shorthand version of what's going on in the book of Malachi, the two-minute version. Please, somebody set the timer and tell me later. In verse 10 of chapter 1, the prophet just exclaims, "Oh, that there was one among you who would shut the door, that you might not kindle fire on my altar in vain." You see, people are showing up to do the worship things, and yet somehow what they're doing makes no difference to God because of what accompanies it, because of the context. And that's what we see the rest of the this problem-setting part of the book establishes, that context that makes their worship vain. And look at it. It can be summarized in two words only: covenant failure, covenant decay, covenant decline. And notice in three different ways. First, in chapter 2:8, priests have corrupted the covenant of Levi. 2:10, Judah profaning the covenant. And then to bring it home into kind of beyond the religious setting, into the families, into the homes, husbands against their wives by covenant. Again and again and again, the people here, the people of God, ostensibly are in trouble because of covenant failure. There it is. That's the problem. And notice, this is not the problem of the world outside. This is the problem within God's people, among God's people, in the household of faith. Now, we could say this is all peculiar to Malachi's time and doesn't resonate for us, and perhaps that's the case. But I want to at least imagine that the possibility exists for us to be in similar circumstances. So I'd like to pick up where the response began. So join me in chapter 3. And I'm just going to read the rest of the book. It's only about 10 verses or so altogether. Chapter 4 is very short. But let's begin reading here in chapter 3 and verse 16. "Then those who feared the Lord spoke with one another. The Lord paid attention and heard them. And a book of remembrance was written before him of those who feared the Lord and esteemed his name. They shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, in the day when I make up my treasured possession, and I will spare them as a man spares his son who serves him. Then, once more, you shall see the distinction between the righteous and the wicked, between one who serves God and one who does not serve him. For behold, the day is coming, burning like an oven, when all the arrogant and all evildoers will be stubble. The day that is coming shall set them ablaze, says the Lord of hosts, so that it will leave them neither root nor branch." And then there's that word we wait for. Come on, now you see it. "But for you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in his wings. You shall go out leaping like calves from the stall, and there's our title. And you shall tread down the wicked, for they will be ashes under the soles of your feet on the day when I act, says the Lord of hosts. Remember the law of my servant Moses, the statutes and rules that I commanded him at Horeb for all Israel. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes, and he will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the land with a decree of utter destruction. Hear the word of the Lord. And now, as in my custom, I want to go back and trace through some of the highlights, some of the language, and then try to draw some implications out of that. So when I do that, I go back to this turning point. And this statement alone, I think, has three points of reference that I want to draw from. I invite you to ponder. If you want to take only one sentence with you, this is it. This is your intersection red light pondering statement. Take it. Live with it. Then those who feared the Lord spoke with one another. Three things in just that one little part. First, I want to grab hold of just the one word, then. Now, you might well argue that, and fancy thinkers probably would, that there is no logical necessity here that this is caused by what went before. Then does not require that. But perhaps there is narrative plausibility in it, at least. And here we see, given this three and more chapters of covenant decay, of God declaring his wrath because of the treatment his people ostensibly offer toward him, in that setting, there is a subset. And the Bible word for that subset is, I think, a remnant. There is some number, whatever that number is, there are those who feared the Lord. And you know that's a phrase that Jeff drew out of the New Testament and dwelled on this morning. And I think we should dwell on it again. Think about this in our time. For many, many religious people, the love of God has driven out any consideration of fear of the Lord. And I don't know how to balance and reconcile that, but I think it has to be true that one does not exclude the other. That if we want to understand well what it means to be people before God, we need to understand he is a God of love, and that cannot be taken away. But he's a God to be feared, too. How do those fit together? Well, my guess is that could be one of the things that people spoke about when they turned to one another. And that's what they did. And to me, this is the most profound thing in this whole passage. Here you have people who find themselves in the midst of degradation, in the midst of this covenant collapse by husbands against wives of the covenant, and by the priest and by the people of Judah. Everywhere they turn, there is this decay. And yet, there are some who have this characteristic feature. They fear God, and they act on that. Here's what they do. They spoke with one another. We don't know what they spoke about. And that's something for us to puzzle. What could that mean for them to speak? And it could prompt us to think, if I fear the Lord, if I really fear the Lord, how am I going to turn and speak to somebody sitting here or sitting across the room or sitting across the commuting bus from me? What will I do? But whatever it is, there is an answer to it. Those who feared the Lord spoke with one another. And you could say that I'm making a lot out of nothing. And you may be right. But I don't think so. Oh, that sounded like the old monk theme song, didn't it? Okay, here we go. Think about this. Because one reason I think it's significant is that God's heard. And he said, these people deserve a book of remembrance. He creates a book of remembrance for the people who feared his name and spoke to one another. I'm going to remember you, he said. Come now. Who doesn't want that to be said? God's going to remember me. Why? Because of those two qualities. And then, just to add emphasis, we're told immediately following, those who feared the Lord and esteemed his name. A double characterizing of these people. So if we want to take this passage and say, how can we be like the people who feared God? We need this to be said of us. We are such people. We're not just people who want Jesus to be a friend and a buddy. We are people who fear God. And that's not a bad thing. That's good. That's right. Now, please, I understand that we can take fear to some kind of knee trembling, and perhaps there's time for that before God too. But you understand that there is, we don't have to imagine the most extreme sense of this word to get some benefit from it or to reject it. We could think about what this could possibly mean. In fact, just recently in this building, right up there at the back of this, I heard this young man saying, "Yes, sir," just a whole lot. He was in the company of a young lady here. And man, he was "Yes, sir," and right and left. And I mentioned that. And the mother of the young lady said to me, "You ought to hear him talk to her father." And I hope he was saying "yes, sir" to that father. That's the right thing to do, to fear that one. Up to a point. You understand. Again, I hope you understand that. Well, what does it mean to fear? Well, when this service is over, those who fear the Lord spoke to one another. I hope you'll turn and speak to somebody about what that means. And if you think I've pushed it too far, then come talk to me, and I'll be glad to listen, and perhaps you can help me. In this little statement, two things. One, the inescapable emphasis on a day. There is a day. In Acts 17, Paul speaking before the Areopagus in Athens, he says that God has appointed a day, or God has fixed a day when the judging is going to happen. It's going to be there. And notice what he calls it here. He doesn't call it the judgment. Right? Look at this. What an astonishing language used here. This, I want to celebrate this. Look, when I make up my treasured possession. Now, please understand this makeup could be taken a couple of different ways. Some of you school students know what it means to make up answers when you have no idea what you're talking about. The reason I understand that is that I know it too. So he's not talking about that kind of makeup, but it is this. It is it's almost the way you would make up a gift basket. I'm going to include this. I'm going to put this in. When you make up. Right here, I'm going to make up a group of people. I'm going to collect them, and they're going to be my treasured possession. What an astonishing language. See, this is what we turn to for encouragement. God's going to do this on a day. He's going to judge, but the purpose of his judging is to make up his treasured possession. Let's talk about that too. And this actually echoes a bit of what Jeff mentioned this morning as well too. He said, then there's going to come a time when you will see a distinction. Distinction is a word maybe a little more elusive in our time, but I think we can see here, well, in fact, we're given two very specific examples. The distinction, here the distinction is represented by the forward slash. We're going to see a line between the righteous and the wicked. There will be a distinction. Sometimes that seems blurred. And maybe in our time it may seem especially that way. I don't know if it's worse now than ever. It may be. But still, there's going to come a time, there's a day fixed when the line's going to be drawn and we're going to know who are the righteous and who are the wicked. And not only that, the one who serves God and the one who does not. See, this just spells it out. Distinction will return. on that day when I make up my treasure possession. I want to know that. I want to know that so I can make my choice to be in that number. Are these? That's just out of a very few verses in chapter 3, I think a pretty dense number of references that are worth our consideration. And now maybe a little more quickly we can run through some things in chapter 4. Notice this, here we see four times a return to the language of the day. There is a day. Once we saw it in chapter 3, here four more times, an emphasis that there is a day when the distinction will be made, when I will make up my possession, when they'll be burning, but not only burning. Look at this. But, there's that turning word. After the burning, there's the but. You who fear my name, there it is, comes back again. Take it with you tonight. What does that mean? Do I do that? The Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing and sweet. What astonishing imagery. I don't have any idea what that would look like. But I want to ponder it. And then he goes on, you shall go out leaping like calves from the stall. Now, if you don't know much about cattle, that's all right. I understand that. You could just watch a seventh grade or junior high Bible class students come out of classroom when it's over. Right? It's not peculiar to them. High school students are about the same way. Adults are about the same way. If you go to any school and you watch the way students walk out compared to the way they walk in, that's a big difference. And then when you watch them walk out on a Friday, it's even a bigger deal. And then in May on a Friday, it's even a bigger deal. Right? This is this enthusiasm of escape, enthusiasm of release that's being suggested here. But for me, this brings to mind things that live richly in my memory. Early in March of about any year, you'd have newborn calves, lots of calves on the ground, and that's what newborn calves do. They run around kicking their heels up, and they have their tails up in the air kind of twisted, and it's a semaphore of exuberant life. I just made that up. It tells us something. That's what apparently is not something brand new. Here's a calf cooped up in a stall. You open the gate, it's like a calf in a roping in a rodeo. They're gone. And that's the way you're going to be. You will get to hightail it. Now that's something to turn and talk to your neighbor. What does that mean? Well, I don't know. But think about it. There it is, like calves from the stall. Picture it. Look it up online. See if you can see some images of such thing. And then here, this is a famous language. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. What a wonderful barometer. What a wonderful indicator is announced to us here. When this change comes, we're going to see hearts turning. In the same way that people turn to speak to each other, here they have this restoring of right relationship. The husbands who had faltered in their covenants with their wives are now turning hearts to their children. And I want to think this every time I look around and see the earnest young fathers here doing earnest young fatherly things, being watchful. Watchful of the herd of youngsters that are playing so frolicsomely here when the service ends. And it is pleasing to see that. And it seems to me to be some part of this indicator. Now, let's go back now and do a little bit of collecting and we'll be done. Notice, for those who want to be God's people, three verbs are given here. Two in the time of the announcing, and then one given in a future. Then some feared and spoke. Let that be true of us. Now, I hope you understand that part of the reason we have to talk to one another is to keep that fear right. So it's not a misguided fear, but a healthy and right and robust reverence. Whatever that might entail, let's talk about it so it doesn't get distorted and become something grotesque and even evil. Fear is not, fear is a good thing, rightly used, but fear is not necessarily good. It depends on how we work with it. And then similarly, when they spoke, well, we're not told a thing of what they said, but it pleased God. And so I invite you to wrestle with that. I don't have an answer, but we're invited to see how much is this like us? How much can we be like this? And then, of course, the future reference is that we'll get to see in the future. We'll get to see that distinction once again. And then notice what God did. It said that God paid attention. It's pretty easy to go through lots of days without thinking God could actually notice me. But here, God notices. In the midst of the degradation, then those who feared spoke to one another, and God paid attention and he heard both. And then he said something. He doesn't just say, He nods and says, or he responds by saying this, "They shall be mine. I will spare them." Twice he gives us these positive rewards attributed to those who did what, who acted the two verbs, who feared and spoke. So, for us, we can do these things. Today, when you walk out of here, you can do these things. Let's recover fear. Not to abandon love, that would be weird too. Right? But love can become mushy if we're not careful. Fear can become weird if we're not careful. So we've got to exercise these words so that they're not mushy or weird. In other words, too, and that's how we talk to one another. That's why we talk to one another, that we try out our ideas and somebody just shakes their head and says, "I don't think so." And let's go back to the text, see what the book says. And when we speak to one another, speak as the oracles of God. And then thirdly, I think we get to anticipate. We get to look forward to something. And I hope you know this. There's probably somebody in this room already thinking about this week and Halloween. Anticipation. There are probably some people already looking ahead to Thanksgiving. Whether it's the food or the away from work or school, somehow the power of anticipation. It helps keep you going. And so we need to cultivate our anticipation. And here, we get to anticipate a day, and especially in tonight's version, not the only version, of course, but in tonight's version, we can anticipate it as God making up his treasured possession. It's 1 Peter, isn't it? 1 Peter chapter 2, I believe, where Peter uses the same language. You are that treasured possession or a holy possession. I forget how it's worded, but the language, you people, you believers, are God's possession. Here, Peter knows the power of that language. Let us invoke that power for us in our own thinking. Let us understand that God's doing that, and we can be part of that. And it's not a great mystery. Micah 6:8 all over again. Fear and speak. And then we can also anticipate seeing distinctions. Just once, when all the maniacs pass me on the road, I wish one would get pulled over. And then I'd want to stop and point and say, "See the distinction." But it hasn't happened yet. And I'm waiting. But it's going to happen. And we get to remember that it fosters. It's not something we can talk about. It's not my distinctions we get to see God making his distinctions. And that's always a healthy reminder, because my distinction making could get pretty weird pretty fast. And so I want to anticipate God making his distinctions, and we can encourage one another by thinking of that. Tonight, how do you sit? Are you ready? Are you ready to accept this word that echoes oddly in our time? Fear God. Are you ready to take that on and say, well, I can make some use out of that. I can do as Jeff said. I can get my thinking rearranged so that I see the fear of God the way God wants me to. Not some made-up perversion on my own, but I want to understand rightly the fear of God. And do you, this tonight, sitting here, do you have an urge to turn and speak to people who you think, with pretty good reason, also join you in fearing God? What we can do about all the degradation around us is maybe pretty limited, but we can certainly fear and speak and see, and I invite you to do that tonight. Most of us have named the name of Christ. Most of us have entered into a covenant. I pray that we can make the covenant keeping rich and true for us individually, for us as a congregation. But there may be someone here tonight who needs to initiate a covenant, who needs to have the beginning ceremony, who needs to come up before this group and say, I believe that Jesus is the Christ. And I believe it so much I'm willing to just change my whole life. I'm willing to get wet. I'm willing to go into the water, all the way under the water, because God says that's what you're going to do if you're my person. And I want you to know why you're doing it. You're not doing it because you need a bath. You're doing it because God shows that people turning to him do this to wash away their sins. And then when you come out of that water, you get to start all over and say, I'm going to do it his way. I'm going to do life his way. Maybe there's somebody here that needs to do that. But certainly all of us, in one way or another, can take what I take to be the bracing challenge of this little passage, very few verses, but a big challenge, and maybe then we can also go forth from here hightailing it and be the people that God will notice and remember and make a book of remembrance for us. If you need to name the name of Christ or you need to seek the prayers of the church, you are invited to come forward now as we stand and as we sing.